Hi, Linda.
Hi, Joanna.
Hey, Lud.
Hi.
Getting this going. Okay. So, welcome. So happy to be here with all of you. And we are in the middle of our listening module, our deep listening skills module. So this week on our class today, we're gonna go deeper into tools for being able to listen and to be able to listen masterfully. We're gonna look at one big tool, a big important one. And then we're also going to take a look at what to listen for. A lot of these things, you know, I think some of them will be new. And so we're going to be covering a lot today. I'm really, really excited about it. But before we dive in, I want to ask you this. What's been percolating for you over this last week? Particularly around everything that we've been looking at so far in Sacred Depths. So maybe something's been percolating for you around energetics, or maybe something's been percolating for you around containers and creating containers and holding containers. Maybe you've been experimenting with some of those pieces in your client work. Maybe you've been thinking about listening. What's percolating for you maybe around supporting clients to feel seen, heard, and loved, or bringing your full presence when you're listening, or listening to your clients and yourself. We looked at being curious. Right? The second you stop being curious is the second that you stop listening well. Maybe something around that's been percolating for you, or how your curiosity got cut off. Maybe you've been thinking about coaching the what based on the who. So take a moment with that. And I'll just give you like 20 seconds. What is it that you're really seeing? You know, whatever that's been percolating for you, what is it that you're really seeing? And or what is it that you'd like to celebrate around it? So what is it that you're seeing? And or what is it that you'd like to celebrate around it? Okay. So I want to take about 4 minutes. I'm going to divide you guys into breakout rooms, mostly of two. There might be a breakout room of three, just to give everybody, I know there's sharing happening in the chat, but just to give you an opportunity to really voice what you're seeing and what's percolating or what you want to celebrate, have an opportunity also to connect with someone else in the program. So I'm going to send you guys off to your rooms. You'll have 2 minutes each. So 2 minutes to share, and then 2 minutes to share, and then I'll call you back. Actually, I'm going to give you about a minute and a half to share, and then 30 seconds for feedback, you know, whatever it is, and then our reflections, and then to shift. All right, enjoy. Looks like everyone's on their way back. All right, I know there were some tech difficulties for some people. I always expect that a little bit with the breakout rooms. But how was that? Did you enjoy that? Was it good to talk to somebody? Good. I'm hoping that we'll have, as I keep on saying, I've got a lot to say, but whenever I can make space for that, I will. Anyone want to share? Time for one share, like something that's really percolating, so either something that you really want to celebrate or something that's been percolating. Dana.
Hi.
Hi.
So I had an interesting realization. There's a little bit of a twist to this, but I was noticing how, when it comes to equalizing, it's not so much with I recently present time, not so much with one-on-one clients, but I see where if I'm in my own Facebook group that I lead or wanting to put something out there, I can tend to think that some of the people in that group who are also maybe practitioners or something, or even clients, that that I back away almost feeling intimidated by certain people maybe in the group or even out there. And then it completely stops me. And that's one of my things is not being out there enough, not, you know, like kind of hiding out. I said that in the beginning, being seen, which in you know, is so needed and necessary. So I don't see it so much. And I have seen it, like if I've held women's circles in the past and have felt myself be intimidated by some people, you know, some of the women that were showing up or, but really I'm seeing it from like a whole spectrum
Yeah.
in the spaces that I'm in.
Yeah, I know it's at first, it's not fun to see that, you know, in that big way, like, oh, but I'm glad that you are, right? Because it's like now that you see it, you can handle it differently. There's less ignoring it. And if you haven't already looked at this, you know, what I would recommend is to ask yourself, you know, you can ask yourself in general or even pick specific people that you're intimidated by and just do a little journaling, like, what is it that I actually believe about this person or myself in relationship to this person? You know, why am I intimidated? What's going on there, right? So to even pinpoint a bit more what's going on for you and then experiment and ask yourself, what's one little baby step thing I could do differently around this week and see if you can stretch yourself on that. Great. Thanks for sharing. I have a feeling that resonates for a whole bunch of people.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. I don't know that we'll have time for all the hands raised, but I'll take a couple more, Michelle.
Thanks. This sort of came up for both of us a little bit in that as I was becoming curious about my listening, not so much in my coaching, even though that can always use some awareness. I was, you know, outside. And what came to me is when I would be curious and want to ask a question, like say to my husband, it would come out like I was coaching my husband. And so how to like figure out how to be curious and interact without being a coach at the same time.
Yeah, it's. I love that you're bringing it up because I feel like that, you know, for a lot of people, I mean, my husband sometimes just rolls his eyes at me and is just like, "Stop, just stop." Right? You don't want to be coached right now. So, you know, it's a good question on how. I think it's just calling yourself out on it and, you know, continuing to be curious, like build that muscle of the listen, of the curiosity and the listening skill, but maybe don't act on it with all of your personal relationships.
Or maybe ask it that's not like, I'm curious, how could you?
Right, exactly. Awesome. Linda.
Yeah, I have a really crystal clear existential dilemma, and that is, I'm really have a lot of conflict around being like always, let's say, always charging for who I am. So mm-hmm. what I mean by that is, like, before this thing called a coach, you know, that we are doing what we're doing, people were friends, they were, you know, sages in their community, or they were helping out. So I have this thing about to what extent do I just be Linda and, you know, doing my coaching and being Linda, the professional coach. And I have a breakthrough because I realized my boundaries really needed to be tightened up big time with my coaching clients.
You realized what needs to be. Can you talk a little louder? I'm not seeing you on the screen.
Oh my God, I'm so sorry.
Oh, that's so much better.
Okay. Oh, I'm so sorry. Sorry about that. I didn't have the microphone.
So okay, sure. That's a breakthrough.
Yeah, the breakthrough was that I had a, I'm in a woman's group, 30 people who exercise together. And I've now gotten a reputation of being this kind of sage person, whatever. And so people are starting to reach out to me and asking me stuff, right? And so I have this dilemma about, at what point do I be just like a woman in the community who offers value and support versus Linda, the coach. So I realized I had to tighten this up, and I had some inner dilemma about what should, you know what I mean? I'm a generous person. Yep. You know what I mean? So I really need to get clarity around navigating that. So that's point one. But the breakthrough is I offered this woman an hour call, you know, because she was having a challenge. She's grateful. And I said, I don't normally do this, but I'm doing this for you as a friend, but from here on out, whatever. So then she reached up again with another question. And I am so proud of myself because I wrote a really good, it would not be in your best interest nor mine for us to give you a quick answer. And I wrote, I wrote something I really felt good about, and it was uncomfortable, but I felt like I was setting a boundary. Like I could feel that there was a boundary.
That's Linda. Yay. Like, it's yes. I'm so excited. Mm-hmm. That's a breakthrough that is just so important, right? On so many levels. And you started off saying that you have an existential dilemma, but I hear you working through your existential dilemma. So
I am, but it's omnipresent. You know, I'm literally, because it's like, this is so much about who I am. Yeah. And every day, and I don't.
And you're not, and it's not going to unravel in like 1 second, yeah. But I'm just pointing out you're moving forward with it, right? Yeah. You're doing it. So yeah. Yay.
All right. Thanks.
You're welcome. So great. Mary Ellen.
Yeah, so right before our last call last week, I had a client session that just sort of snowballed into massive overwhelm for my client. And I wasn't really able to help him ground before the end of our call. And then we went right into the call about creating the container and having it clean and clear, and everything that was like brought up, I just started to go into a major shame spiral of all the things I'm not doing. And so what I did with that was I brought it to my partner, who has been wonderful. He's really great at holding space and just shared from that really vulnerable place. And that same evening, I had a woman's circle call, and I did the same thing. I just really shared and cried and, you know, got it out. And knowing that I would likely repair and work on it. So today, yesterday and today, I had two client sessions, and these are clients that I've been seeing for years. And we've just recently sort of shifted from breath work. So I've been doing strictly breath work with them, which is really basic coaching. And then really it's all about the breath work experience. And so recently we've been doing everything virtually, and I've been coaching for the first half and then doing breath work, and totally realized like I didn't create this safe container for, or even intention around what we're doing with the coaching. Like I normally would with a new client, I would, you know, set them up with the first session and all of that. We just sort of, it's organically happened and it made sense to do that, but realizing like, no, I need to kind of back up and almost go back to foundations of what I do in my coaching sessions. So I had the difficult conversation with a client yesterday and a client today, and I feel like I've cleaned it up some. You know, there's probably more that I could do, but yeah, I kind of let go, allowing myself to feel bad or shameful about it, but then doing something about it. So now I feel just more empowered, I guess.
I'm so happy to hear it. And it's such a beautiful process. I think, you know, when we realize we've messed up or, you know, whatever it is, like there is, you know, it's hard not to feel that momentary, right? But what I really see is that you kind of allowed it and then you allowed yourself to move through it. You didn't get stuck in myth of perfection or anything like that. And you're not only taking steps to make the things were already great for clients, but to make them better, but for you to feel really good. So well done on all accounts.
Yep. Thanks.
Yeah. Beautiful. Okay. So let's jump in or jump back in to listening skills. And one of the big tools or set of tools that I want us to really focus on today has to do, it's another obvious one. Like I said, a lot of what I'm sharing is obvious, but it's one that I really want for us to unpack carefully and help you get to the subtleties of, so that when you listen, when you operate, when you coach, when you listen, you can do it in a whole different way and a way more powerful level. So this tool is all about filters, listening filters. So we're going to look at listening filters and listening privilege. And this whole topic of filters is one that can really help you support your clients to feel seen, heard, and loved. It's one that requires your full presence. It's one, everything we looked at last week, it requires you to listen to your client and listen to yourself, and it requires you to be curious. So here's the obvious part. Whenever we listen, whenever we're listening, no matter who or what we're listening to, we're never listening with clean ears unless we clean them first. We're never listening with clean ears unless we clean them first. We're never actually able to hear fully what the other person is saying and the layers beneath it until we recognize that whenever we're listening to someone or something else, we come to that experience with our own filters, with our own biases. And all of those filters, all of those experiences, all of those biases can either help us to listen very, very well. They can help us listen very well if used correctly, or they can become a major obstacle to truly, truly hearing what your client is sharing. Our filters and our biases are part and parcel of any conversation that we have, any learning experience that we have, really any experience that we have, period. So what are these filters that I'm talking about? Well, basically, they're the sum of all of the beliefs, perspectives, and understandings that we have pretty much about everything based on our past experiences and our backgrounds. And because our filters are so deeply embedded inside of us, yeah, that's all, Stanley. It's just that. And so because our filters are deeply embedded inside of us, unless we do the work of becoming aware of our filters, then we're not aware of them because they're just so intrinsically a part of us. Okay, so let me kind of start to give some, I can give so many examples of filters. It's endless, not to Don't get worried by that, but I just want to give you some examples so you really get what I mean. So your religion is a filter. Let's say you grew up Catholic, and particularly if you still practice Catholicism, and maybe you haven't like questioned it or anything like that, when you listen to other people, whether you realize it or not, you're likely listening through a Catholic filter. Or here's another example. The part of the world that you live in is a filter. And again, particularly if you've lived in that part of this, that same part of the world your entire life. So when you listen to other people, you're listening, for example, through an urban filter or a suburban filter or an American filter or a Southern filter. So again, what I mean by that is if you've always lived in an urban environment, you literally hear information and make assumptions based on your urban filter, unless you've checked it, unless you're aware of it. You make assumptions about diversity in a town or traffic in a town or even business in a town. You know, I come from New York. I live in the South now. You know, having lived in the New York area my whole life, business, you people work a lot more than in the South, right? Until I really moved to the South, I only had an urban New York City filter. If you've been thin all of your life, you automatically move through your life and listen with a thin filter in most cases, right? If you haven't questioned it or had thoughts or issues around it, right? So again, if that filter, if that thin filter is unchecked, you might make assumptions about other people's experiences or desires or beliefs based on that filter. If you've been healthy most of your life, you have a healthy filter. And I have a personal example around this. So my first business partner, my only business partner, one of my dearest, dearest, dearest friends. When I first started business, my friend Dawn and I started a business together. And I, being type A person that I am, and thank goodness healthy and have a lot of energy, I get things done very quickly. I have tasks to do and I do them just in a very quick way. And Dawn would lag behind and I knew that she had an autoimmune illness. We'd spoken about it many times. But I never took that into consideration when I would get annoyed at her, right? It was like, I was only looking at the situation as I have this much energy. These are the expectations that everybody should have, right? But that's not true. And I'll just say, like, thank goodness that filter got checked for me. Since then, over the years, I've had quite a number of clients that have come to me. And by the time they've come to me, they've been shamed and hurt, you know, by other coaches in the industry who are like, hell yeah, coaches, or you should be able to do this in this amount of time. A newsletter article should be able to be written and, you know, whatever it is, but that's coming from a particular unchecked filter. Again, I could go on and on about different filters here. Money generation or money is a filter. If everybody in your family has gone to college, that's a filter, right? You listen with that filter. And then if that filter goes unchecked, you may not realize that it's a really big deal when a client has gone to college, right? Like that's a celebration and that's a success. And that's something that client feels really proud of, but you might bypass that because you haven't checked the filter that just happens automatically. It's what you do, right? I'll give one more example, you know, from my many mistakes over the years. So I've got a particular filter around my hair. My mother lost almost all of her hair pretty early. She has an illness. And because of that, you know, from a young age, I formed certain attachments to hair, essentially, to having hair, to my hair looking a certain way. One day, if you want to get into the brain of Joanna, we can get into all of the pieces around that. But my point is, a number of years ago, so that's a filter, right? That like having hair, especially as a woman, is important. It's probably a filter that a lot of people have, right? But it is a filter. And it was unchecked for me. And a number of years ago, I started working with a client, a woman, who zero hair on her head, just completely bald. And because that filter was unchecked for me, I made an assumption that part of her visibility issue had to do with her appearance. And that wasn't the case at all, right? It was my stuff and my filter that was unchecked. Okay, so I want to be clear. It's not that filters are bad or that they prevent you from being an amazing listener. Not at all. In fact, your filters have the power to help you understand the layers beneath the layers of what your client is sharing. Your filters have the ability to help you really get someone. You really hear them more quickly than it would take for them to explain all the things about themselves and the details of their situation. Your filters really can help you have a lot of wisdoms about situations. So your filters are very, very powerful. So for example, if you're a working mother, you get the struggle of another working mother. You may probably also get the struggle of someone who doesn't have kids, but works and has another big thing in their life, like a sick parent, or you know, whatever it is. If you come from a filter, let's say you're an expat, you've lived in a foreign country, you know, you get that, right? There's certain things that you'll get and hear more quickly. So filters can help us listen more effectively if and only if, and this is the important part, we're 100% fully aware of the filter. Our filters can help us if and only if we go into conversations understanding that we've got these filters and that we don't take them for granted or let them slip into our unconscious. It's when we take our filters for granted, when we're not aware of them, that we get blocked and stopped up in really listening and hearing, seeing, hearing, loving other people. That's when we make false assumptions. That's when we stop hearing important details. When we aren't aware of our own filters, then we also run the risk of coaching the what without facing it on the who. That's when we run the risk of coaching the what. Remember from last week, right? We want to always coach the what based on the who. So here's an example. And I'm going to take this out of coaching or clients. I give you another personal example. So one of my filters is being the type A person that I am and, you know, the perfectionist. I always cared a lot about schoolwork growing up. Right. And doing well in school was really important for me. And I was always very diligent and too much of a good girl, to be quite honest. Well, guess what? I got a daughter who doesn't care about being a good girl at all, like at all, you know, like she, thank goodness, has, you know, like so much more self-value than I did when I was her age. But when I first started becoming aware of the fact that Penina was not really caring so much about getting straight A's, I didn't check my filter and I just automatically went to like, there's something wrong with her. It's not okay. What's she doing wrong here? When really it was just more important. She was doing great in school, but theater and singing were just way more valuable for her, right? So we want to really make sure that we're aware of our filters. I'll give you another example. This does have to do with client work, of a time when I wasn't aware of a filter. I was working with a client and she had an affair. She was married and she had an affair. And thank goodness I caught myself, because I for a moment I went into an unchecked filter of that's not right, or there's something wrong, or this needs to be fixed, right? And I saw myself do it, and then I caught myself. Now, to be clear, it's because what she didn't need was going into solutions or for the person holding the space for her to feel like something was wrong. She wanted to fix some things in her marriage, but we also together had to look at, why did that affair happen? What was going on for her? What did it do for her? What was she learning from it, right? Like, so if I hadn't checked my filter in that situation, I may have led her in a place that would have been totally misaligned for her, and possibly into a shame place too, right? So what we're really talking about here is the ability to really see your clients with full clarity and not through the distortion of your filters. Now, this next piece is really important. We want to be aware of all of our filters, but especially those filters that come from a place of privilege, especially the filters that come from a place of privilege. Because if you've got a filter that is based on your experience of having a certain kind of privilege, that's often the least challenged type of filter for yourself and within culture. And that's often the place where you might be prone to make the most assumptions if it is unchecked. So our privileges don't have to hold us back from hearing others, but if we're not aware of them, not only does it hold us back from hearing others, it can even cause harm, right? If it goes unchecked. So this isn't about having shame for the privilege that you have. I just want to be really clear. It's about being aware and checking it when you're listening to your clients. So there are a lot of different ways that we can have privileges. I'm gonna just share some of the most common ones, but this isn't an exhaustive list, right? So race, right? So if you are white, you have a privilege, right? And so you want to make sure that you're not making any assumptions based on that privilege. So for example, before the world of Zoom, so I've been, practitioner for a long time, where like for many, 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 many years, I didn't see anyone, right? It was just over the phone. I couldn't see people on video. Oftentimes when you have a privilege, you tend to center yourself. Like you tend to think everybody is that, right? So, again, back in the olden days of audio only, if you were white, one way of not checking that filter is just assuming who you're speaking to is white, right? Or here's another example. If you are listening, if you're white and you're listening to your client and your client is Black, you've probably had the privilege of never having a terrible run-in with the police, right? And nobody in, or whatever it is, but don't make that assumption for your client, here's kind of a mundane example, but it's one that, like, as soon as I became aware of it, it gets me every time. It's not a coaching, in the coaching context, but still. When you go to hotels and they've got the little bottles in the bathroom of shampoo, it's making an assumption that the person staying at the hotel has the kind of hair that white people have, right? Like, it's for a very particular type of hair. That's just totally an unchecked filter, or either making an assumption or not caring, right? Religion is another privilege. If you, and again, nothing to be, there's nothing wrong with any privilege, right? But you just want to be aware of it, right? If you are Christian, you are privileged in your religion, at least in the United States where I am, right? So again, I don't know why I'm back to hotels on this matter, but just as like a mundane example. So I'm Jewish, and, you know, growing up, or at least it was like the hotels we stayed at growing up, there was a Gideon's Bible, like in every hotel room, right? And I remember as a little girl being like, am I supposed to be staying at this hotel? You know, it's just making an assumption that it was for me. If you're heterosexual, that's a privilege, right? Don't make assumptions based on that, right? So, you know, one example of that, you don't make an assumption that your client is heterosexual. When you're putting together journaling questions for groups, you know, a lot of times I ask questions about parents, right? Don't assume that there's a father and a mother. That's not checking privilege. If you're cisgendered, and so what that means is that the gender that you identify with matches the gender that you were assigned at birth, right? That's a privilege, because that's a, you know, more of a, more people are norm, you know, and I'm using that in a very particular way, right? But don't assume that. If you're able-bodied, if you're healthy, if you're thin, right? Those are privileges in culture, certain economic level. If you had two parents, that's a privilege. If English is your first language, if you live in the United States, that's a, right? So there's so many, and again, I don't wanna, I'm not being exclusionary, it's just that we could go on for an hour and a half with this, right? So be aware of your privileges. So while we're on this topic of privilege, I think this is a good moment. I just want to name that most of the people in this cycle of sacred deaths are white. And from what I can tell, as I've been listening to you speak about yourselves and read your introductions, that most of the people also in this cycle are cisgendered. And there, that's great, makes perfect sense, nothing wrong with that. I'm white and cisgendered myself. But because of this, and because it's so important to me that all the spaces that I facilitate be inclusive and equitable and have a diversity of voices, I really need to watch and do my job as a facilitator. And I'm sharing this with you, you know, facilitator's point of view too, right? It's, I really need to do my job and watch to ensure that every person in our circle knows that they're welcome and wanted here, and to do the best that I can to curate our conversations so that it's just not the white, cis, female, point of view, right? And be clear, if you're white and cis, I want to hear from you. I want to. I'm not telling you to not raise your hand at all. But I'm sharing, you know, to be clear, and again, to model for all of you, that I want this to be an equitable space and a space where we're exposed to many voices and many experiences, because that's really the richest kind of learning environment. Now, while we don't have time today to go into all of the different actions and practices that we can put in place around being, you know, checking our privileges and equity and diversity and all of that. First, I just want to say this is something that I've worked on and continue to work on. And if you ever have any questions, please ask. And I'll share with you as much as I know. And also, we're not meeting live next week, but this is a perfect placement. We'll be releasing, we've got a recording, a conversation between me and Makita Penny Cook. And it's a conversation, it's mostly based on race. And Makita's Black, and so it's particularly looking at white privilege and making things more equitable for all people, but you know, particularly from a Black point of view. And so you'll get that training next week. I highly, highly recommend listening to it. It's from 2017. So this is before George Floyd and, like, you know, all that's happened, thank goodness, in the last less than a year. So some of the information on that call are things that you may already know, but I always find it's important to come back to and come back to and come back to. I also want to name that we're lucky enough to have someone in this cycle who is a DEI and anti-racism coach and consultant. It's Nima Novak. And so, and I've done some work with her already, and she is amazing. And if this is a place where you want to go deeper, I highly recommend getting in touch. Okay. So just to be clear again, it's totally 100% okay if you don't have all of the same exact filters as your clients, experiences as your clients. You can still really, really, really hear them and hear them well, but again, only if you do your work around filters. So we're going to get to what that work is in a moment, but let's pause here. What are you hearing so far that feels important to you around listening filters and privileges? Take a moment and jot some stuff down. What's important so far around what you're hearing? You another moment. And then Julia, I want to hear, but I'll just give everyone one more sec. Julia.
Hey. What comes to light for me is how forgiving I am of other people's filters. But as you were speaking, I realized I am so harsh when it comes to my poor, unfortunate husband, who is half white, half Japanese. And I am like, one of the first people to go in there and be like, I'm here to correct you. But just listening, like, all I saw was just all my filters come up. The assumption that the people grew up in stable relationships with parents who never shouted at each other, or that going to school is a given, or speaking perfect English is a must, or just woo.
Yeah. Yes to all of that. And yes to, unfortunately, if we have partners, sometimes they get the brunt of all the things. Good. Seeing some great things in the chat. Hearing there's more to it than you ever realized. Yeah. Naomi wants to add the filter of settler privilege. Yes. Thank you for bringing that in, Naomi. Thank you. To do a deep inventory. Yeah, and that's gonna be part of our homework, Linda, to do an inventory of the domains. Listening without filters is truly tuning in. Yeah. Maya.
Hi, hi. I actually wanted to ask how to, almost not to do the opposite. I teach in a very elite college, and most of my students are Chinese or Korean from very privileged families. Some of them are American white kids, and I get on the average 1.5 Black students a year. They're always wonderful, and I always feel like maybe I'm trying too hard. I realize how much of a minority they are in a group of school in general and my class in particular. And I feel like I'm almost focusing so much on my filter that perhaps I am overdoing it, and in that way, isolating them, or I don't have a good word for it, but do you know the, do you know what I'm trying to ask?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. So I'm not, first I just wanna say, like, I'm not an expert on this. So I'll share from my experience, like in terms of coaching and listening skills. And also I'm very open to, you know, anyone that wants to share. But first I just want to honor you for being aware of all of that, right? And yourself and your filters and all the pieces. And then the other pieces, back really to our first week, knowing that you're whole and complete exactly as you are, and knowing that who you're listening to or speaking to is whole and complete exactly as they are, whether they have a privilege that you have or not. Is that helpful?
Yes. Yes, it is.
Good.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Yvonne, you're asking, what about our unconscious biases? I know we can't, it's hard to become aware of all our unconscious biases, but we're gonna have like some homework that will hopefully help to start uncover some more of those. Okay. What's a filter that you have that's really helped you go deeper with clients? So what's a filter that you have that's helped you understand clients really quick, or get to the details of the details without them having to share all of the details, or you know, help you really get it? What's a filter that you have that's really helped you go deeper? Yeah, we're getting some great stuff here. Parents, divorce, corporate environment, yeah. Trauma filter, 100%. Yep, each of our challenges is a filter for sure. Divorced, being queer. Great. All right, next question. What's a filter that you've got that maybe has been unchecked for you until this, to our class today, that you're seeing maybe has held you back from fully hearing either a client or another person? What's a filter that's maybe been unchecked for you? Having children. Yeah. The assumption that to remain stuck means that you love it. Yeah. That everybody wants to grow. Yeah. Money filters, aging filters, the assumption that all people are ambitious. Yeah, these are great. Good. Extreme poverty. Yeah. Yeah. Good. Okay. Projection around beauty, yeah, being educated. Okay, so what's the work of checking our filters? Well, we've already started doing it today. Number one, to become aware of our own filters and our privileges, right? So we've started that, and you'll have a worksheet. Again, it's not going to be exhaustive, but it will help you to go deeper. You also want to, as a part of this, you want to be aware. So, you know, not just of the assumptions that you're making because of your unchecked filters and privileges, but you want to be aware of this. Unchecked filters lead to unchecked biases. Unchecked filters lead to unchecked biases. Right? So you want to make sure that you're not bringing unchecked biases into your sessions. Right? So this is about asking yourself some uncomfortable questions. And just by the way, we all have unchecked biases, right? Or biases. So for example, if you're thin, and again, there's so much to, right? There's so much that can go on in your inner world too around that. So I don't even want to make an assumption about that. But, you know, do you have certain biases about people who aren't thin? If you're Christian, what do you think about people who aren't, right? Just be honest with yourself, right? Just so that you can check. If your parents weren't divorced, do you have bias? What are the assumptions that you make about divorce? Are there biases, right? Or even the other way around, if your parents were divorced, do you have certain biases there? Okay, so get clear, not just on the privileges and the filters, but the assumptions and the biases based on the unchecked filters. And again, you're not going to do it all in 1 week. Right? This is like an unraveling process. I'm always finding new ones for myself. Don't make yourself wrong too, right? Like I want to normalize all of this also. Just work towards unraveling it. Another part of the filter work is to start to take note of your clients' filters. That is going to help you listen better, right? So you're probably already doing this, whether you work with clients or, you know, in your relationships, personal relationships, right? Like, what are your clients' filters? You know, are they coming from, again, an urban filter, a suburban filter, a Muslim filter, you know, all the different things, right? Because the more that you can understand the filters that your clients are seeing through, the quicker you're going to be able to understand them. Another important piece in filter work, activate the highest level of empathy. Activate the highest level of empathy, which you really can only do if you've become aware of your filters and checked them. So the Merriam-Webster definition of empathy is the action of understanding, being aware of, being sensitive to, and vicariously experiencing the feelings, thoughts, and experience of another without having the feelings, thoughts, and experience fully communicated in an objectively explicit manner. That's a mouthful. I'm going to put that into our chat. And please always remind me to put things into the chat because sometimes I forget. So the action of understanding, being aware of, being sensitive to, and vicariously experiencing the feelings, thoughts, and experience of another without fully having those feeling thoughts and experiences communicated explicitly. So a short way of my understanding of this, and this is what I always do when I'm working with a client, is as best as I can, I put myself in their shoes. as best as I can. I'm in my shoes, right? Like I'm seeing things from my perspective, but I'm also as best I can seeing things from their perspective. This is vital to listening. And I literally sometimes imagine myself looking through their eyes, hearing through their ears, right? Before I say something that's a little bit edgy, right? How is this client going to receive? How are they going to hear this, right? Okay. So last piece on filters, and this is already, I think, baked into so much of what we've been talking about, but I want to make sure I say it explicitly, is I want to encourage you as you're listening and also just as you're going through your life and doing all of your coaching and working with clients to actively poke holes in old narratives and to challenge your assumptions, not just personal ones, but I want to invite you to poke holes into collective and cultural assumptions. And a biggie that we can tackle is patriarchal thinking, which has so many legs to it, right? But for example, poking a hole in the narrative that doing more is better than doing less. Poking a hole in the narrative that there's only masculine and feminine. Poking a hole in the narrative that fat is a pathology. You know, right? There's so many. Go on and on and on and on. Couple other pieces. On filters, when you realize that you're listening through a particular filter with a client, and it's like you're not clear if that filter, you're totally clean on it, check in with your client to make sure you're getting that right. Right? I want to make sure I want to make sure I'm getting this right. It sounds like, right? Sometimes with clients, I'll even say, I want to make sure that my filters aren't getting in the way here. Because when I hear you say blah, I'm thinking, you're right. And I'm just totally transparent about it. And I put it back to them, right? Okay. So as part of your homework, like I said, you'll get a worksheet to uncover some of these filters. And then over this next week, we've got 2 weeks until we're live together. Again, I want you to also just be thinking as you move through your days, as you move through your client calls, if you're working with clients, just really be aware. Are there unchecked biases? Are there unchecked filters? And then to also become aware of what your client filters are, as I said earlier. Okay. All right. We're going to move on from filters, but before we do, I just want to check in. Any last thoughts for right now or questions around filters or anything you want to share about what you're seeing? Yeah, Jenny and Mark.
No, this was making us think about the whole concept of intersectionality, which is something I've been thinking about lately, of how, like, I can simultaneously have one filter where I'm in the privileged position and another one where I'm not, and the two can actually like conflict or trigger each other, or it's just an interesting and a tricky thing.
Yeah, I'm so glad you're bringing that up. It's so true. And I'm saying this with hesitance because this may not be true, but I think it is, because I've seen it. I've been in that conflicting place, but I've also seen that when I can be aware and then do the inner work, right, of the triggers of each of the particular ones, they can also work powerfully together too. They don't have to be at odds. Mm-hmm. So I'll just toss that as something to play with and think about. Okay. All right. So Linda's asking, what do you mean by intersectionality? Mark, do you want to answer? Why don't you go ahead and answer that?
Sure, okay. So intersectionality is where you can have multiple different filters or identities that are part of who you are. So for example, for me, I'm identify as male and I'm also neurodivergent, or I'm white and I'm Jewish, so it's the different parts of your identity or different filters, and how you can, in some situations or in some of them, are the more privileged and some less. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Awesome. Yeah, Vesica, just go ahead and take yourself off mute if you don't know how to raise your hand.
Oh, okay. Okay, great. I didn't realize I needed to. I was raising my hand, but I should do it. Okay, great. My question is, so I'm relating this. I like to say, and it may be from my background of NLP, but looking at someone's model of the world, how they see the world, is that the same as the filters?
I think it can be. Yeah, absolutely. Like how your experiences have shaped how you see the world, how you hear others, all of that, for sure.
And then the other question I have was, because like I did get an aha, because I am like many of the amazing people on here. I also have that thing where I just feel like everyone wants to grow and they want to be in unity and they want harmony on the planet and they want to go deep and do their spiritual work. And so I realized that's actually a filter for me. At the same time, it's also a gift that I bring to the table because of the point of view I have, supporting people to maybe have that wake up inside of them.
Yeah.
So I'm looking at like, is the body, because I want to make sure I'm not, you know, overlooking that, but I also like am looking at that, right? Is the bias a judgment as well, or is it just okay?
Yeah. So the filter is just the filter, right? The believing that everybody wants harmony, unity, whatever it is. And then the bias is if you believe that people that don't want that are evil, or you know, whatever it is, right? And it may end up that it's true or not true, I don't know, but you want to be aware of the bias, right?
Right. So then that means, because I feel like I don't have judgment about anyone's belief, but I do feel that I have like a purpose and a mission that may, and I think I need to be aware that I don't ever separate myself from another by my purpose or my mission being so strong working with people. And I find that people wouldn't want to work with me who weren't.
Well, that's what I was going to say, is I think part of it is also marketing, right? So like, if this isn't already baked into your marketing, I would bake it in, because my guess is that your ideal client is someone who has this particular filter, right? Or this, and so that's okay, you know, if that's who your ideal client is, but I would be explicit about that in your marketing.
And that's one more thing, because actually I think this is a big reason I wanted to do this training with you, Joanna, is that there's something about being able to open that up in people who don't know it's there for them. So maybe they're not there yet. Maybe it's more about the people that are in between that are needing some support in waking up, and how I do that gracefully without triggering them into anything that they're not.
Yes, perfect. 100%. And so that's where, and this is such a great example, I'm so glad you're bringing it up, is like, so then here's the intersection of being aware of your filter and then understanding what season your client is starting in, right? Back to what I was sharing on the supplemental video last week, because some of your clients on this, they might be in summer, like they're raring to go, they already fully believe it, and others may be in winter in this, like there's a whole lot of uncovering that has to happen first. Good. Sharon.
Hello. So I'm a little fuzzy because I was in a very deep snowy afternoon nap right up until I came on the call. But I'm thinking about, and this may not be in the right context. So I had posted that I, you know, had shared this, you know, Jeep ad from Bruce Springsteen, and I'm a big Bruce Springsteen fan. And then there was like all this backlash that like I got it and I didn't have an issue with it. So then is that my privilege? Or like I was thinking about Kabbalah. I've had, you know, been in some Jewish women's groups where they kind of dismiss it out of hand, or dismiss a lot of things about Judaism, because that's what I know, out of hand, because it comes from this deeply patriarchal place. And like, I never had a need to say goddess instead of God. To me, God is gender neutral, but people have, you know, issues. And I just kind of, I always thought of it as I was able to like, not throw the baby out with the bathwater, or kind of see the bigger picture and take what was good and not have to dismiss because of.
I think I see. So I don't know what you're talking about, Bruce Springsteen. So I'm not gonna go there, but I think, okay, so I'm gonna just say one thing for now, because I think it might be a bigger conversation, but particularly when you're teaching, you do, you know, versus one-on-one, I mean, you always wanna be aware of the filters, but when you're teaching, you wanna speak to it, right? So you can still, you know, name God, not God, goddess, but you want to say, I know there's a lot of patriarchal thinking, and right, like you want to name it so that there's space for that.
Right. And I don't care about how your language, I will say to people, you know, I use the word God, however you frame.
Exactly. Exactly. So if you can give context and name, and then be clear about how you're using it and why, right?
Thanks.
Okay. I know there are other hands raised. We'll have time when we complete for more shares, but I want to move on right now because I want to just go through all the different things that you should be listening for when you're listening to clients. And what I want to say going into this is you don't need to keep all of this active in your mind. Most of you that are already working with clients or just listening to people in your everyday life, you're already listening for many of these things. This is just about pulling in, you know, one more a week that maybe you're not listening for, or you're not listening, you haven't been listening as deeply as you could be. And you'll get a worksheet with all of this. I'm not even going to go through everything, all of the things. I'm just going to kind of touch on some of them. The way that I kind of have divided the different things to listen for, I've divided into three different categories. To me, the categories make sense. If the categories don't make sense to you, don't pay attention to how I've categorized them. But the first category, I would fall, all these things would fall under listening for the client's presence. Listening for the client's presence. So first thing under presence is you want to listen for your client's emotional state, right? And why is this so important to listen for your client's emotional state? Because let's say, so I in business, you know, and I coach clients on business, let's say a client comes to me and they say, I didn't fill my program. Well, I didn't fill my program. They could be totally upset, or they could be totally fine with it, right? Part of that is my checking my filters, right? But I wanna listen for their emotional state. Another reason why it's important to listen for the emotional state, a client can come to a session and say, I didn't fill my program. If you don't listen for their emotional state, you won't know if the way to lead the session is to go into inner pieces because there's fear or sadness or anger or self-judgment, or if they want to talk strategy and find solutions from the get-go, right? Part of that is also back to last week, asking intentions. But even if a client says, you know, my intention is to get strategies so that I can fill my program next time, but you are listening for their emotional state and you hear that there's more going on there, you're going to want to take leadership in that moment and ask if you can go into some inner pieces first before you get to solutions or next steps. Another piece under listening for a client's presence is listening for if the client is engaged with what they're talking about, because that's going to give you a lot of clues It's going to help you listen deeply, right? If a client is talking about a new project and they're so excited, they're engaged, that's going to give you one set of information, right? But if you're listening for clients' engagement and a client is talking about a new project and the client doesn't sound very engaged, that might give you a whole other set of information. Silence, right? Oftentimes as practitioners, usually, and especially sometimes when we're new, we can get scared if there's silence. But silence is 9 times out of 10, it's not a bad thing at all. It might mean that a client is deep in thought about something we've asked them, right? Or something big has come up for them. It might also mean that they've trailed off, right? But we want to be listening and noting. Want to listen for a client's pacing, right? So if they start to speak really quick, you know, and again, it's all about context, but it might be they've gotten really excited about something. Or if they start to speak really quick, it might be that they're trying to just brush over something, right? So pacing is a good thing to listen for. Same thing with tone. Tone is a really good thing to listen for. Do they get quiet about something, right? Are they getting louder when they talk about something? Another piece under your client's presence is, what is your client's essential nature, right? Who, when I say essential nature, what I mean is, like, are they naturally a curious person? Are they naturally, you know, do they get angry easily, right? What's their essential nature? It's important to know, because that will help you hear them better and also know, you know, how to communicate and pieces to pull. But the other thing that it will help you, and this is kind of a, over time, is when a client has strayed from their essential nature, that's something to listen for as well. The other piece under presence that you want to listen for is how connected energetically the client feels to you. Now, got to check all your filters, make sure there's an equal playing field, right? Like, really check all your stuff. But you may have situations where a client, you're in session, but you just don't feel that the client feels connected to you. That's, you're going to want to talk about that, right? Name that, all that, but you need to listen for that first. Second, well, so let me ask you guys, of this first category, client's presence. So I named emotional state, client's engagement with what they're talking about, silence, pacing, tone, essential nature, and then how connected they are to you. Which one of these, if you had an area of improvement, which one of these would it be? If you were to pick one to kind of focus on. Yeah, and Sharon, you're asking about essential nature. So I really mean, like, are they normally a lighthearted person? Are they normally a little bit of a heavier person? Are they normally energetic? Are they normally a little bit more sluggish? It could be a variety of things, but I always like to kind of note, you know, who is, how does this person normally show up? Can I say more about what I mean by engagement? Do you guys mean with what they're talking about or with you? Jenny and Mark, with what they're talking about. Yeah. So let me know if this makes sense. You, sometimes you can be listening to someone, a client or otherwise, and they're talking about something, but they're just not engaged. Like, they're not excited about it. Their heart isn't in it. It feels like they're saying it just to say it, but they're not present with it. Hopefully that makes sense. Let me know. That's what I mean by engagement. All right, next category of things to listen for is I call apparent clues that are kind of obvious. So, for example, You want to listen for a match or a mismatch between your client's behavior and their goals and commitments, right? So what that means is if they've got a goal of, you know, I don't know, owning a new home, is there a match or a mismatch with their behaviors around that goal? Another thing to listen for in this category is what's motivating the client. This is an important one. Sometimes we don't know just from listening, you know, we need to ask, but is fear motivating the client or is it desire? And we'll look more, you know, at this issue in one of our calls coming up. Are other people's expectations motivating the client or is it their own expectations? Is it aligned expectations? So what is it that's motivating the client? Is it jealousy that's motivating the client, right? We want to listen for that. We want to listen for specific language and terms that the client uses. We'll, in our questioning module, we'll get very detailed into listening for and using particular language and terms. But for now, I'll just say, for example, if your client is married and they refer to their spouse as their partner versus their spouse versus their husband or their wife or their life partner, or whatever it is, you want to listen for that. Right? And you probably want to use that language when you're referring to their partner or their spouse. You want to listen for your client's strengths. This is so important because most of us as clients don't really listen for our own strengths. And we'll look much more at this in a couple of calls, but we want to hear our clients' strengths, both so that we can acknowledge and celebrate them for it. But number two, so that when we're strategizing or asking questions, help them leverage those strengths in their strategy. We want to listen for a client's obstacles or potential obstacles, right? Enough said there, right? We want to see like what their the obstacles they're experiencing are, because that's a place where we may want to go, or what the potential obstacles may be, like if they continue to move forward. We want to listen for our client's beliefs. We want to listen if our client's goals have shifted or their vision has shifted. This can often happen in a sneaky way, and practitioners will miss that their goals, what they want to commit to, their vision has shifted, right? And that can create a leaky container, right? There are different sets of expectations. Also, sometimes a client isn't aware that their own goals have changed. So it's a big learning moment to create awareness around that. Another thing under apparent clues is who's influencing the client. So in other words, who are they listening to and who are they modeling after? So a big one that often comes up in my work with entrepreneurs is like, you know, a client comes to me. I mean, this rarely ever happens anymore, but you know, a couple of years ago and before it would happen a lot, a client would come and be like, I want to earn, you know, multiple six figures in a month, whatever it is. It's like, where'd you get that information from? Like, who are you listening to? Like, who are you modeling after? All right, so let's take a look at this category. From these that I mentioned, where's an area for you to lean into next? So listening for match or mismatch of behavior and goals, listening for what's motivating the client, getting more clear on listening to specific language and terms that the client uses, listening for client strengths. Oh, you know, the other one I didn't mention, it's related, but listening for client wins and celebrations. obstacles, listening for client beliefs, listening for if the goal or the vision has shifted or who's influencing the client. Where's a place for you to pay more attention of those? All right, and then last category are clues that are maybe not so apparent that we kind of have to go searching for a little bit more. So what I would put in this category is if something seems misplaced with the rest of the conversation, right? So let's say a client is talking about a work goal, but then they insert something about their brother in the middle of it, right? So that's kind of like a misplacement, but you want to listen for that. You maybe don't want to just bypass that and only look at the work thing. The brother piece might be coming up because there's an issue that they need to resolve there first, or it might be related to the work piece, right? So you want to see if something seems misplaced, or if a client is talking about something, they're so excited, and then they offhandedly mention something really negative about it, right? That's like something that's misplaced. You want to pick up on that. You want to listen for what the client isn't saying. So if a client is talking about family gatherings, but never mentions their brother, there may be a reason for that, or there may be something important there, right? Depending on context and all the things. You want to be listening for inconsistency between who you know your client to be and what they're saying. So this is another reason why it's important to know your client's essential nature, right? So for example, if you know your client to be a very in integrity person, but they're sharing an idea that they have that's maybe blatantly out of integrity, that's an inconsistency. That's just good information for you. If a client repeats anything, that's something to be listening for. If they repeat it, there may be an emphasis on that, right? It might be something important. Another non-apparent clue is you want to be listening for what the client is becoming aware of. So what is it that they may not consciously get yet, but that they're starting to become aware of? And again, all these things that we're listening for, we're going to use them in when we create awareness. We're going to get to that. We're going to use them when we ask questions, when we strategize, all those pieces, right? We're, you know, just like what are things we're listening for? We want to listen for what the client is scared of. And then the last one in this category, we want to listen for the client's inner voice. So let me explain what I mean by this. We want to listen for how a client talks to themselves, and what a client thinks of themselves is often not totally the same as how a client talks about themselves to you in session. And so the more that we can pick up on cues on what a client's inner voice is, what's that private voice, you know, how are they speaking to themselves, the more we're going to understand also limiting beliefs, what a client is scared of, what's motivating them, you know, all the things. And a little clue that can oftentimes help us understand or hear a client's inner voice is how they ask questions. So for example, use the example of like a program didn't get filled, back to business coaching, right? If a client asks, well, how can I do better next time? Or what can I do differently next time? that's a very different question than what did I do wrong? Right. And it can give you insight to how they're speaking to themselves. Okay. I know I went through all of those quick and we're just at time. You're going to get a resource sheet with all of the pieces. And my invitation to you is over, if you're working with clients over your next few client sessions or in regular conversations with people to pick one or two, right? Like we did today, pick one or two things to see if you can listen for. And then at the end of the session, this is bonus points. At the end of the session, go through the full list of things to listen for and kind of make notes on what you listened for and what you heard, right? And maybe some things that you missed. Okay. I want to honor that we're at time for today. I shared almost all of your homework, except this is going to be our first week where we've got our coaching partner homework. So hopefully by now you've connected with your coaching partner, you've set up your container, right? Times to meet and all of that. I'm going to share the coaching partner homework right now, if you can hang on, but I'll also do a Facebook Live on it in the Facebook group as well. And then we'll open up for any questions. So for this first partner coaching practice, you know, we're starting small. What I want to invite you to do is practice your listening skills. So when you are coaching your partner, you know, you'll have about 25 minutes. You'll do a coaching session. You'll do a session. And if you've never coached before, first of all, I'm going to drop just a short recording of a coaching session for you to listen to. Just so, because I know sometimes like if you're a total new beginner, you're like, wait, but what do I even do? Right. So I can give you that. But here's what you need to remember. Back to container. Start off with what's your intention. Think about container, guide the conversation. You know, use your listening skills, ask questions. Don't worry if they're good or bad. Point things out. And then end with what are you taking away, right? That's all you need to know for now. So you'll do your coaching. And then when you have your 10 or so minutes of feedback or, you know, looking, what I want you and your partner to really look for is what are the things that you heard, right? So what did you hear? What were some of the filters that you noticed for yourself? What were some of the filters that you noticed for your client? And partner that just got coached, as honest as you can be around if you felt seen or heard and what you felt your coach really heard well. And if you felt there are some pieces that they didn't hear, right? So this is all done with love and without judgment, but for learning and for building the muscle. Okay. So if you need to go, go. If you can stay for a few minutes, I would love to hear if you want to share either what you're taking away or if you've got any questions. Wendy.
Hi, thank you. Yeah, my takeaway is there's so important to be present. There's so much to pay attention to. So just going to reiterate that.
Yeah, and don't drive yourself nuts. Like pick a thing and then pick another thing and you'll see if you're aware, you're going to start integrating it.
Yeah, no, it's good. It's just a lot, but yeah, it's good. My question is about the coaching sessions. So when we are the one being coached, are we bringing in something to our sessions particular? Is that going to be more identified?
Yeah. So if you want to think beforehand, like what is it, you know, if you got to have a session, what is something you would like to work on? An issue that you're having, something that needs a solution, a way that you'd like to move forward. you bring something as if you were a real client to a session.
Is it good? Let me ask, can I just have you expound on that? Yeah. So is it helpful in this, because we're going to work with our coaching partner over the next months, you know, is it going to be beneficial to set, here's my long-term goal for our time together. Mm-hmm. Here's what I'm looking, you know, to shift or achieve or whatever, and then have that be just like I would otherwise?
Yeah, it's such a great question. It's such a great question. I'm so glad you're bringing it up. So it can be great to do that. Sometimes you're just going to want to practice, like, I'm just bringing this random issue in, you know, this is what's on my mind. But if you know that you have a goal that you want to work on, you know, over time, you can bring that in for sure and speak to it, you know, and then get practice on working the goal over time. I think it will probably naturally happen anyway, but if you want to set that as absolutely 100%.
Thank you.
Great. All right, there's some other questions in the chat. Yeah, Sonia, thank you. We didn't send out the emails yet for the cohorts because I felt like it was too overwhelming with all the coaching partner emails we were sending out. So those are going to go out either tomorrow or Thursday. Forgot to mention that. Do I suggest that we meet with our coach partner during our regular scheduled? Absolutely. So you can meet with your coaching partner whenever you want, so long as, especially if you're going for certification, that you meet at least 18 times. So a lot of people like to just meet the weeks that we have class. You can set it up with your partner however that makes the most sense. Should we bring something in that's in our area of expertise? Yeah, so not necessarily. I mean, it may work out, you know, for example, if your area of expertise is business and your partner wants to look at business pieces, that's great, or health, or, you know, whatever it is, but you don't have to be tied to that. You just use the skills that I'm teaching, because this is really not about consulting. You know, you'll bring consulting in because we naturally do, and we consult on many things sometimes that aren't even our expertise, right? But it doesn't have to match up with your expertise. What should be the length of the call? So 60 to 75 minutes is really ideal. If you and your partner can't, then 60. If it's 60 minutes, you would do about 20, 25 minutes, and then 5 minutes feedback, and then switch partners. If you've got the 75 minutes in there, it gives a little bit more spaciousness. All right, Maya. And then Dagmar, can take your question. Janae, and then Dagmar.
Hey, I had a question from before when we were talking about the filters. How do you damage control when you're working with more than one person? I was doing a training, creative training, never thought anything about it, asking people to connect with the body, actually asking people to do a creative exercise based on a body. And I got a feedback from somebody who said, I'm having trouble. And I said, oh, what's happening? And just like not thinking anything about it. And he privately wrote to me and he said, I was molested as a child. And I was just like, oh. So, I mean, I think we got to a good place, but I felt completely out of my depths. We are all so different. Our filters are also different. Our experiences, as empathetic as one can be, you can't foresee all of them. What do you do once that pops? Yeah.
So two things I want to say there. So first of all, 100%, like there, I mean, I still have plenty of filters that I'm not aware of, right? And so long as were trauma informed, which we're learning here in Sacred Deaths. So long as we bring our full presence when there's a, you know, problem, you know, that we haven't, we just do our best to work it out exactly the way that you did. Like, I can't make any promises that it's always gonna be this perfect, beautiful flow and tie things up in a knot, because that's, human beings are messy. Like, we're messy and our clients are messy, you know? So I can't, you know, it just, right? It is what it is. So I think that's an important piece for you, like no perfection here and understanding that we're messy. And almost all of the time, it's not about whether we like knew or didn't know, but it's like what we do with it from mm-hmm. there. The other piece is that specifically around visualization with body, and I don't do this as often as I should. So, you know, reminder to myself to say, you know, everybody knows their body best. You know what's comfortable. You can adapt in this way and think about this thing or see, right? So you can also give permission for people to adapt in exactly the ways that they need to. Yeah, Vesica's saying if this feels, you could say if this feels comfortable for you.
Right. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Janae.
I just have a request. I'm actually just, our time, our trainings are kind of like me time. That's why I'm like lounging and everything. But my request is it possible for the chat to be downloaded and like added to the Facebook group or something? Because I'm staying so focused on what you're offering, but I'm sure that there's
my guess all kinds is yes. But I'm a tech dummy. But I'm going to ask my team because
it's pretty easy. Like where, you know, it is easy to download the chat, but that I just feel like,
yeah,
I'm sure that
if you know that it's easy to do, then I'm going to say we can do that easily and we'll start incorporating that.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Asking. Okay. Dagmar, and then Heather, I'm coming to you too.
Joanna, so I have a question for you. So I'm running my own certification. This is the first year that I'm doing it. And it's specifically for women's pelvic health. And I have now, I was like for 6 months, I was in an